The first time I remember encountering GPS in a rental car was out in Colorado as I went to see my parents, and as I was traveling up Highway 85, a divided highway, there was a frontage road that went right alongside the highway, not very many feet away from it. And we came to a place where we could stop to eat, and so I pulled off, and basically what the GPS said to me was, get back on the highway. And I remember being so impressed with the accuracy of that GPS, that global positioning system, that it would tell me that I was off the highway when I was just a few feet over to the side. Well, some of us might remember some pictures from the Gulf War, where there were missiles that were being sent out with their own global positioning service and were so accurate that they were able to strike. One picture that I recall was of a missile that came to a particular building, and there was a stack there, presumably a chimney of some sort, and it went right down that chimney and blew it up from inside. The accuracy of that global positioning system just is mind-boggling to me. But it's that pinpoint accuracy that we need to have when it comes to seeking the Lord. There needs to be such a focus, as if we could dial in the coordinates to be able to say, this is where I need to be, this is where I need to look, this is where my focus must be. We looked at this 3 weeks ago when we noted in the life of Rehoboam, the son of Solomon, that he did evil because he did not set his heart to seek the Lord. Now that becomes kind of a standard bearer verse for the rest of the book of Chronicles. And we'll note that in a little bit. But then right after that we have, of course, the life of Abijah as the king, Rehoboam's son. So you have David, Solomon, Rehoboam, Abijah. And Abijah's the one who calls out to Jeroboam and the northern kingdom, saying to them, look, the Lord made a covenant of salt with David, a covenant that cannot be revoked, but a covenant that stands securely. And you have left David, so you cannot prosper. Now we come to the son of Abijah, who is Asa. And in the Chronicles account, much more time is spent on Asa than there is in the Kings account. Remember, Samuel and Kings cover much of the same territory that the books of 1st and 2nd Chronicles cover, but it deals with both kingdoms, both the northern and southern kingdoms, whereas when you come to the book of Chronicles, it focuses in on just the southern kingdom, just the line of David to whom that covenant of salt was given. Asa is regarded as one of the good kings, but you'll see when we in a couple of weeks that he was not always faithful. But for now, we see some faithfulness in him that is wonderful. And for our scripture lesson then, we'll read 2 Chronicles chapter 14. 2 Chronicles chapter 14. Hear the word of the Lord. Abijah slept with his fathers, and they buried him in the city of David. And Asa his son reigned in his place. In his days the land had rest for 10 years. And Asa did what was good and right in the eyes of the Lord his God. He took away the foreign altars and the high places, and broke down the pillars, and cut down the Asherim, and commanded Judah to seek the Lord, the God of their fathers, and to keep the law and the commandment. He also took out all the cities of Judah, the high places and the incense altars, and the kingdom had rest under him. He built fortified cities in Judah, for the land had rest. He had no war in those years, for the Lord gave him peace. And he said to Judah, "Let us build these cities and surround them with walls and towers, gates and bars. The land is still ours because we have sought the Lord our God. We have sought him and he has given us peace on every side." So they built and prospered. And Asa had an army of 300,000 from Judah, armed with large shields and spears, and 280,000 men from Benjamin that carried shields and drew bows. All these were mighty men of valor. Zerah the Ethiopian came out against them with an army of 1,000,000 men and 300 chariots, and came as far as Maresha. And Asa went out to meet him, and they drew up their lines of battle in the valley of Zephatha at Maresha. And Asa cried to the Lord his God, "O Lord, there is none like you to help between the mighty and the weak. Help us, O Lord our God, for we rely on you, and in your name we have come against this multitude. O God, O Lord, you are our God. Let not man prevail against you." So the Lord defeated the Ethiopians before Asa and before Judah, and the Ethiopians fled. Asa and the people who were with him pursued them as far as Gerar, and the Ethiopians fell until none remained alive, for they were broken before the Lord and his army. The men of Judah carried away very much spoil, and they attacked all the cities around Gerar, for the fear of the Lord was upon them. They plundered all their cities, for there was much plunder in them, and they struck down the tents of those who had livestock and carried away sheep in abundance and camels. Then they returned to Jerusalem. May God bless to us the reading of this portion of His holy word and continue to teach us from it, that we might draw near to Him and so learn to honor Him. A number of years ago, in my reading through the scriptures, I remember coming to this book of 2 Chronicles and being impressed with the number of times we found the word "seek" in regard to seeking the Lord. Now, of course, it would be in various forms. There's "seek" or "seeking," the participle, or the past tense "sought." And I didn't think much more of it, except for the fact that that seemed to be a theme. And that has been confirmed for me in my study, especially in preparation for today. The chronicler is really impressing upon us the need to seek the Lord. Remember who he's writing to, or writing for. He's writing for those who have returned from exile and they have come back to Israel, to the land of Judah, to live there once again. Now, how are they going to live as they are there without their own king? Other nations will oppress them, and there aren't very many of them. And that's what the chronicler is dealing with in both these books, which really were originally one. Turn with me, please, back to Deuteronomy chapter 4. Deuteronomy chapter 4. Moses is addressing the Israelites as they are preparing to go into the land of Canaan and to take it over. And if we begin, well, in verse 25, you see them, him proposing that they might act corruptly and provoke God to anger, and he might take them away In verse 27, the Lord will scatter you among the peoples, and you will be left few in number among the nations where the Lord will drive you. The very situation that these people have been in, they were taken into exile. And then Moses goes on and says, and there you will serve gods of wood and stone, the work of human hands, that neither see nor hear nor eat nor smell. But from there you will seek the Lord, your God. And you will find Him if you will search after Him with all your heart and with all your soul. Moses is dealing directly with the situation that these exiles who have returned, these people who have returned from exile, have dealt with. Now let's jump ahead once again to Jeremiah chapter 29. We read this earlier in the service, but in Jeremiah chapter 29, look again at verses 10 through 14, and you see the very same situation. Except now it's Jeremiah instead of Moses saying, you will seek the Lord and you will find Him when you seek for Him with all your heart. Verse 10, for thus says the Lord, when 70 years are completed for Babylon, I will visit you and I will fulfill to you my promise and bring you back to this place. For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans for welfare and not for evil, to give you a future and a hope. Then you will call on me and come and pray to me and I will hear you. You will seek me and find me when you seek me with all your heart. I will be found by you, declares the Lord, and I will restore your fortunes and gather you from all the nations and all the places where I have driven you, declares the Lord, and I will bring you back to the place from which I sent you into exile. Both Moses and Jeremiah have prepared the chronicler to look at this matter of seeking the Lord. And how that's what the Israelites are to do as they have returned from their exile. Now, as you look up the word seek, you'll find it used many times in ways other than seeking the Lord. For example, the priest was supposed to search for something. He was to seek something if there was leprosy there. Or people would seek for various other things. But the expression, seek the Lord, surprisingly, only, if we think of the first books of the, as we have them in the English Bible, from Genesis through 2 Chronicles, or maybe just 1 Chronicles, and up to 2 Chronicles chapter 10, the matter of seeking the Lord, this expression, is found only there in Deuteronomy chapter 4, and then in 1 Chronicles chapter 16, where there is a quotation of the psalm that we sang at the beginning of the service, Psalm 105. Let hearts that seek the Lord rejoice. But when we come to 2 Chronicles, and we come to the reign of Rehoboam, and from there onward to the end of this book, This expression of seeking the Lord, or they sought the Lord, or something of that nature, occurs over 30 times. Does that not tell you how important this phrase was, this concept is, to the chronicler? So that as the people have returned from their exile, they're being encouraged to seek the Lord. And once again, that verse, chapter 12, verse 14, where it says of Rehoboam, he did evil because he did not set his heart to seek the Lord. Yes, we are sinners and we sin because we are sinners, but it's much greater than that. He did not have the coordinates of his GPS set on seeking the Lord. That was not his focus. And that, yet that is the focus that we are to have. So just those two exceptions, prior to 2 Chronicles chapter 12, we don't find that phrase, seek the Lord, but now it becomes an emphasis. Now that doesn't mean it wasn't there. In fact, we find it in the prophets, in later books of the English Bible. One of the best known ones, of course, is in Isaiah chapter 55. Seek the Lord while he may be found. Call upon him while he is near. Let the wicked forsake his way and the unrighteous man his thoughts. And there you see the counterpart of seeking the Lord, which is forsake. Those who forsake the Lord. So that seek the Lord is just the opposite of forsake the Lord. And please note that there is no middle ground between the two. You are either going to be seeking the Lord or you are forsaking the Lord. You are either seeking the Lord or you're going your own way. That's the concept that is before us here. Whereas in the books of Kings, as we come to each king, there's a comment, well, he did evil, or he did good like his father David, except that for the this happening, and so forth. This is the way, then, that the kings are evaluated. Did he seek the Lord, or did he forsake the Lord? Now this is set forth for us as a command. Beginning with verse 3, he took away the foreign altars and the high places, broke down the pillars and cut down the Asherim, and commanded Judah. This was not a good suggestion. Some of you might remember a number of years ago, Ted Turner, the owner of the Atlanta Braves, saying that he preferred to call the Ten Commandments the Ten Suggestions. This is a command. And he was able to command the people of Judah to seek the Lord. And it's a command that we are to be giving to one another. Fathers to their households. Pastors and elders to the congregation. Those in business, you need to seek the Lord. You need to command your people to seek the Lord. This is a command of God. It's what He calls us to do. To seek the Lord, the God of our fathers. So this is not a strong suggestion. It's something that God expects of us. It's a command that we are to give to one another. Seek the Lord. As if you're just in the way that you might set the coordinates on your global positioning system on your phone. Let your focus be that pinpoint on the Lord. Okay, well, what does that mean? What does that involve? Well, we have that, I think, outlined for us when you see some of the things that Asa did as king. First of all, he destroyed the idols and the foreign worship there in verse 3. He took away the foreign altars and the high places and broke down the pillars and cut down the Asherim. That is, he was radically cutting off the opportunity to worship false gods. And isn't that what God calls us to do? That we would radically cut off the idols of our hearts. Not foster them in our hearts. Not dwell on them thinking how wonderful they are. Oh boy, I wish we could worship them, but God says no. Some of you might remember studying that book, Idols of the Heart, by Elise Fitzpatrick. a book in which she deals very much with the idols that we have in our hearts. And one that stood out to me, I remember in reading that book, was that of Rachel, who said to her husband, Jacob, "Give me children or I die." And she died giving childbirth. We are to radically cut off the idols of our hearts. And Jesus made that clear, didn't he, in the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew chapter 5. Speaking particularly there of adultery. He says, "If your right eye causes you to sin, tear it out and throw it away. For it is better that you lose one of your members than that your whole body be thrown into hell. And if your right hand causes you to sin, cut it off and throw it away. For it is better that you lose one of your members than that your whole body go into hell." Now obviously, if you're lusting because of something that you see with your right eye and you tear it out, you can still see with your left eye. So that's not what he's really calling you to do in a physical way, but at least spiritually, to cut off the opportunity to sin. To cut off that opportunity, to radically destroy it. We find it stated another way in the book of Proverbs in chapter 4. Perhaps some of you have memorized this passage. If not, it's a great one to have memorized. Chapter 4, beginning with verse 14. "Do not enter the path of the wicked." Notice, it doesn't say, don't follow the path. Don't enter it. Don't enter the path of the wicked. "And do not walk in the way of evil. Avoid it. Do not go on it. Turn away from it and pass on, for they cannot sleep unless they have done wrong. They are robbed of sleep unless they have made someone stumble." Destroy the idols. Destroy the false worship. Destroy those things that would keep you from seeking the Lord. Then in verse 4, we are taught another thing about seeking the Lord, and that is to obey His law. "He commanded Judah to seek the Lord, the God of their fathers, and to keep the law and the commandment." To keep the law and the commandment. Yes, we as Christians are still obligated to keep the law. It's still our responsibility because God has called us to be obedient to Him. God has called us to honor Him, and we honor Him by doing the things that please Him. And so we please the Lord by keeping His law, obeying His law. The Apostle Paul in Romans chapter 6 speaks of this as well, and the duty that we have. "Let not sin therefore reign in your mortal body to make you obey its passions. Do not present your members to sin as instruments for unrighteousness, but present yourselves to God as those who have been brought from death to life, and your members to God as instruments for righteousness. For sin will have no dominion over you, since you are not under law, but under grace." And notice that once again, these are not suggestions. This is command. This is a command that's given to us. You see, when you receive the grace of God, it compels you. It compels you to do what pleases God. It compels you to obey. There's a third thing that is mentioned here. It may seem like it's the same as the first one, but it is, I think, different. Verse 5, "He took out of the cities of Judah the high places and the incense altars, and the kingdom had rest under him." You see, there's a difference between what happened in verse 3 and what he did in verse 5. In verse 3, he's dealing with the false worship that's out there, the false idols, Whereas in verse 5, he's dealing with the wrong way of worshiping the true God. Because they were still using the high places to worship the Lord. They were offering incense, which was only supposed to be offered there at the golden altar in the tabernacle. And so we're dealing here with false worship of the true God, not worship of false gods. That we are to worship God as He gives us the way to worship. You see, it's not for you and me to devise for ourselves how to worship God, what we think would be a wonderful way to worship Him. But He's the one who commands us how we are to worship Him, and He gives us those instructions and calls us to be faithful to Him. There is to be no compromise with improper, with ungodly worship or with anything of that nature. No compromise that would take us away from what God has set for us to do. So you see, seeking the Lord is this all-encompassing activity that deals with putting away sin, putting away sinful ways of worship, and putting on obedience to the law and the proper worship of God. Notice the blessing that comes. And this is an emphasis that we find here in the beginning of this chapter. Notice how often you find words like rest and peace in these first verses of chapter 14. The land had rest for 10 years in verse 1. Verse 4, verse 5, how the kingdom had rest under him. He fortified the cities of Judah, for the land had rest, and the Lord gave him peace. And then verse 7, for the Lord has given us peace on every side. The word that is used, the Hebrew word for rest that is used here, is a word that was used back in Genesis. Noah's father called him Noah by using this word. Nuah is really what the Hebrew word is. And you might recall that what his father said when he named him was, perhaps this one will give us rest. Here is the rest that we are to have. It's the rest and the peace which God gives. And rest and peace are the fruit of seeking the Lord. It's what He provides for you when you seek Him. And this includes prosperity. There are different words that are used for peace here, but the one that we commonly know, shalom, is used in chapter 15 concerning the peace that God gives to His people. And that deals with prosperity as well as just the cessation of war. And we see that what they were able to do was to defeat a much larger army that had come against them. 580,000 against 1,000,000, plus 300 chariots. A formidable army. But they sought the Lord. They called upon Him in order that they might seek the Lord. And He defeated the army for them. He defeated Zerah and the Ethiopians. It was the fruit then that He gave as they sought Him. Rest and peace are what God had promised. It's part of His covenant promise to us. Back in 1 Chronicles chapter 22, we have David wanting to build the house, but no, God said it's to be your son who builds the house. And so David prepared for this. And in verse 9 we read, behold, a son shall be born to you who will be a man of rest. I will give him rest from all his surrounding enemies, for his name shall be Solomon, and I will give peace and quiet to Israel in his days. This is part of the covenant of salt that God made with David, that he would give peace and rest to his people. Now, of course, there are many people who will promise us peace and rest. Many articles that are sold or advertised will promise security for you, that they'll give you peace of mind, that you'll be able to rest at night. But God's the one who actually does give peace and rest. He's the one who's able to give peace to those who are panicked about their situation, who look at the enemy and say, there's no way that I can deal with that enemy. Who see the stack of work that is before you and say, how can I accomplish this? How can I do the work that God has given me to do? It's because He has promised to be a God who gives peace and rest. And that's continued, of course, in the Son of David who said, come to me, all who labor and are heavily burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me. There's where we find rest. And if you're finding yourself disturbed in life, if you're finding yourself upset, flee to Him. Seek the Lord that you might find rest. Whatever it is that disturbs you, maybe it's that you just can't sleep at night. Flee to Him for that rest. Call upon Him. Now, perhaps this goes without saying, but it's because it's so closely related to what we have just said about rest and peace being God's covenant promise for us, but it's also set forth as the inheritance that God gives to His people. In Deuteronomy, again, as Moses is speaking to the Israelites before they cross the Jordan River to go into the land of Canaan, Deuteronomy chapter 12. I begin with verse 8. You shall not do according to all that we do here, are doing here today, everyone doing whatever is right in his own eyes. For you have not as yet come to the rest and to the inheritance that the Lord your God is giving you. But when you go over the Jordan and live in the land that the Lord your God is giving you to inherit, and when He gives you rest from all your enemies around so that you live in safety, then to the place that the Lord your God will choose to make His name dwell there. There you shall bring all that I command you, your burnt offerings and your sacrifices, your tithes and contribution that you present, and all your finest vow offerings that you are to vow to the Lord. And you shall rejoice before the Lord your God, you and your sons and your daughters, your male and female servants, and the Levite that is in your towns. Notice that rest and peace are the heritage that we receive from God. And that's what He did. In Joshua chapter 11, verse 23, after conquering things, the kings of the north, we read, and the land had rest from war. And then over in chapter 14, the very last words of that chapter once again, and the land had rest from war. And moving on to the toward the end of Joshua with verse 21, verse 44, and the Lord gave them rest on every side, just as He had sworn to their fathers. Not one of their enemies, of all their enemies, had withstood them, for the Lord had given all their enemies into their hands. And then at the beginning of chapter 23, a long time afterward, when the Lord had given rest to Israel from all the surrounding enemies, and Joshua was old and advanced in years, Joshua summoned all Israel and its elders. God fulfilled what He said He would do. He gave them rest. Here's your duty. Here is our duty to seek the Lord, to call upon Him, to look to Him, to destroy the idols, to keep the law of the Lord, to worship Him and Him alone. Because it's as you come seeking Him that you will have joy in Him. There you have the peace and the rest which He has promised and which He gives as an inheritance. When you find your mind is in turmoil, are you ready to flee to Him, to seek the Lord, to set the coordinates of your mind and your heart on seeking the Lord as you would your own GPS system when you're traveling? Let your heart seek the Lord. The psalmist says, O Lord, You are my God, and early will I seek for You. Turn, please, to Psalm 63. We're going to use 63a as we conclude the service. Early will I seek for You. Why is He so willing to seek for Him right away, so early? Another translation has it, earnestly. Well, it's because I'm a thirst for You. I'm thirsting after You. I just can't get enough of You. There is this longing that is given to us that ought to be ours when we seek the Lord. Psalm 63a. Let's stand and praise our God.